Great. Okay, so my name is Philip, and I'm a PhD student at Stanford, and this is joint work I've done with my advisor, Dawson Engler. So static analysis is an automated way of finding bugs in software by inspecting source code without actually executing it. And static analysis has been a fairly active area of research for the past few decades, and in recent years has been commercialized to various products and deployed in industry. So the topic of this talk is, how do developers respond to bug reports issued by these static analysis tools? So this research will address three main questions, which I'll talk about in order. First, which bug reports reported by these tools do developers actually look at? Right? So static analysis tools have no troubles generating hundreds or thousands of warnings, but developers, because they have limited time and attention, can't possibly look at all of them. So which ones do they actually triage? And by triage, I mean actually looking at a bug report carefully and determining whether, yes, this is a true bug that we want to deal with, or no, this is a false positive, because either this can never happen in real execution, or there's some imprecision in the tool that the tool made a mistake. So secondly, how are these triage reports clustered? So do developers randomly look at reports in different files, or are they looking at them in clumps? So can we predict which reports someone's going to look at by looking at the other reports they inspect? And lastly, are static analysis bugs actually meaningful? Are they simply merely very superficial things like, oh, you forgot a null pointer check here, or just simple compiler type warnings that are problems but may not be very deep? Or do they actually indicate something about the quality of the code and some other sorts of bugs that are perhaps deeper? So the way we perform this case study is mostly using quantitative data analysis, and we supplement with some qualitative analysis as well. So our primary data source is 2,125 bug reports reported in the Linux kernel from a static analysis tool from a company called Coverity. And what Coverity did is that they scanned, they've done approximately weekly scans through the Linux kernel source code starting in February 2006 and reported their results in an online database. So developers can look in that database and triage bugs. So they can look at a bug report and say, yes, this is a real bug, or no, this is a false positive. And we also wanted to know the history of these files that the bugs affected. So we mined the source code revision history data from BitKeeper and JIT over the past few years as well. And in order to lend some insights into to see how to interpret these quantitative results, we emailed this informal questionnaire to kernel developers and received a few responses regarding how they interpreted what we found. So the first topic I want to talk about is which bug reports the developers actually look at. So the main factor that determines whether a developer looks at a bug is what kind of checker is it? What kind of bug is this tool looking for? So the Coverity checker checks for a dozen types of generic low-level C code bugs. So the typical things are buffer overruns or null pointer dereferences and so forth. So this table, what I'm going to show is the number of reports total, the percent of those reports that were actually triaged by developers, and also a relative notion of the false positive rate. So due to confidentiality reasons, we couldn't disclose the actual rates, but we'll just report the relative ones. So I've sorted these reports by the percentage that were actually triaged. So the ones on top are, unsurprisingly, some of the most critical bugs. So buffer overruns are classic sites for security vulnerabilities. Uninitialized value reads kind of lead to these weird non-deterministic bugs, which may be kind of hairy to catch in practice. And also dead code bugs are quite interesting because while they may seem superficially kind of shallow, they actually oftentimes indicate some kind of deep semantic logical misunderstanding. Because if a developer is writing code within a bunch of, let's say, deeply nested conditionals and such, and that code is provably can never execute, then that means that developer has misunderstood something about the interface of the code. And that could actually lead to some weird semantic errors. So on the low end of the triage rates are the types of checkers with really high false positives. So these ones are quite unreliable, that 10, 11, 12, the higher the number, the higher the number of false positives relatively. And so, I mean, it also makes perfect sense, because if a checker is unreliable and flaky and issues a lot of false reports, developers are not going to trust it and not going to, be likely to triage their reports. So another thing that correlated with whether reports were triaged is how old the files were. in this graph here, the thing to focus on the beginning is what's in that shaded shaded box. So we split up files based on their age, based on a cutoff of, let's say, 2 years. So we said every file that's older than 2 years is marked by the plus, and every file that's younger than 2 years by minus. So the 54% on the bottom shows that 54% of bugs in files that are old were triaged versus 71 in files that were young. So because 2 years is kind of an arbitrary scale, we ran the same analysis on different splits. And consistently, the pluses are below the minuses, which means that reports in older files are less likely to be triaged than ones in younger files. So one developer responded in the following way, quote, "More often, the people involved in creating those younger files will still be active kernel developers and still interested in the areas those files cover." So in general, younger files are under more active development than older files, because there are a lot of places in the kernel code base, one person wrote a driver somewhere 10 years ago and didn't really maintain it, so that if a bug report is reported from one of those files, nobody really has the motivation or the expertise to actually look at it. And finally, similarly, reports in smaller files are more likely to be triaged. Again, we did the same split. So let's say 2,000 lines. Anything above 2,000 lines is a big file, and less than 2,000 lines is a small file. And again, big files have a lower chance of their bugs being triaged than smaller files. And the split is fairly consistent, although the effect isn't as strong. And the grayed out marks on the left-hand side are ones that are not statistically significant. And one developer responded with two possible reasons. Quote, "Perhaps due to the buried and warning syndrome, and also perhaps because smaller files are easier to modify." So smaller files just have less chance of things going wrong. There are probably less reports for smaller files than for bigger files, so they're easier for someone to triage. And also, smaller files are implement usually simpler functionality and are also easier to modify in order to fix bugs in them. So next, I want to look at the clustering behavior. So do developers randomly pick which bugs to look at, or is there some pattern in how they actually inspect these bug reports? So first, there's a clustering in space. So there's a tendency so during a particular scan, let's say, during a particular week, a bunch of files were scanned, and a particular file had, say, 5 bug reports from a static analysis tool. Most likely, if someone actually cares about that file, they'll invest effort into triaging most or all of the reports in that file and say, this is a bug, this is a bug, this is not a bug, so forth. So it's given, we quantified it by giving the numbers above. So the unconditional probability is at 46% of all reports in a given session for a file being triaged. And if the conditional probability, if at least one report was triaged, that jumps up to 65%. So if at least one report is triaged, the probability that all of them are triaged jumps up. And if at least 2 reports are triaged, that jumps up even farther. And the same pattern repeats with untriaged. So if someone is ignoring reports for a particular file, they might ignore all the reports, as shown by the similar numbers below. So secondly, there's this clustering time. So you would imagine that if somebody cares enough about a file to inspect and triage bug reports in it, then they'll be more likely to triage future reports in the same file. So recall that the scans are done roughly weekly. So given a scan in week N, and what happened to the bug reports there, can we predict what happens to the bug reports in week N plus 1? So we took all the files with reports in more than one, occurring in more than one scan, and just calculate conditional probabilities again. So we said, if no bug reports were triaged in some particular scan where there were reports, then the probability that you would triage some reports in the next scan is 50%. And if at least one report was triaged, that conditional probability goes up 9% to 59. And a developer responded, quote, "Triaging bug reports can be quite intimidating. Once a developer has got up some confidence in the subsystem, they're more likely to step up to the plate and triage again." So this, again, shows not only interest, but also expertise. So not only, perhaps one developer may feel comfortable triaging one file and keep on doing it in the future, but also because somebody cares about that file, that means that other developers might care about it as well. And the probabilities go up when someone actually triages it and marks it as a true bug. So not only triaging a report, but saying this is a real bug that we're going to deal with. And that's an even stronger indicator that somebody cares about this file, or this file is important. And again, if the thing was marked as a true bug, and also someone marked in the database, I fixed this now, and it's been fixed, then it's even a stronger indicator. So what this shows is that the triaging behavior of of developers and files can actually be some kind of proxy for how important this file is. And given this large software system with hundreds or thousands of files, obviously not all files are going to be important to developers at a given time. And and seeing what bugs they triage is could be a good proxy for code importance. So then there's the issue of false positives. So if developers mark bugs as false positives, then they're less likely to triage in the future. And the quote here is, quote, "False positives tend to lower the maintainer's trust of the tool and are more likely then to let future reports from the same tool slip." So note again that having false positives gives you a slightly higher triage rate than if nobody was triaged, because at least somebody bothered to look at the file, which means someone at least cares about it. But it's lower than all the other probabilities, so that if you triage something marked as false positive, you're a bit less likely to triage the same bugs in the same file in the future. So the final topic I want to discuss is, you know, are these bugs actually meaningful? Are these just simple compiler-like warnings of, oh, this is a silly mistake, I'll fix it? Or do they actually indicate something deeper about code quality? So I want to start by contrasting bugs found by static analysis tools and bugs that are reported by users. So an example of a static analysis bug would be null pointer dereference on line 36 of sounddriver.c. So it's a particular low-level type bug that's has to be apparent in the source code, because otherwise an automatic tool can't find it. And also, it points to an exact line on an exact file. So you know, we don't know what the root cause of this null pointer dereference is. Maybe this is some simple mistake, or maybe the developer actually didn't understand something about, you know, what function returned this, you know, the caller can return null. In contrast, a user-reported bug is something at a much higher level. So a user-reported bug might be, "Sound blaster card emits a weird tone when playing demo.wav." So the user or the tester usually has no idea which file or line is causing this bug. Perhaps it's several files and lots of lines that are causing this bug. They can only report the symptoms and not the exact cause. So at first glance, these two types of bugs seem really different. And you know, although these are both, you know, incorrect behavior in the program, it seems like developers might care more about user-reported bugs, because for one, they are reported by users. So that means that somebody has actually executed this code, this driver, let's say, and found something that is incorrect. Whereas, because static analysis bugs, because you're not actually executing the program, perhaps this null pointer dereference is only in some weird error handling code when you're about to go out of memory anyways. And yes, it should be patched up, but is it really worth the cost of doing so? So it turns out that static analysis bugs and user-reported bugs are pretty well correlated, actually. So we're claiming that static analysis bug reports can actually predict the incidence of user-reported bugs in the future. And I could direct you to related work that they've done at Microsoft that shows a similar thing on a commercial code base. So what we've done is, to quantify these numbers, what we've done is we only counted all the files alive during February 24, 2006, which is when the first Coverity scan occurred. And that first scan found 981 bug reports. And we did this, we froze this point in time so we could eliminate some biases from calculations. So what we did is we partitioned the file population into those with no reports, into those files with greater than or equal to one report, with some triage reports, and at least two reports. So what we want to do across time is we want to see how many user-reported bugs happen in the near future. You know, right after this, this set of reports happen, what happened a month in the future, 3 months, 6 months, a year, and the rest of the lifetime of the file. So the first thing we want to look at is how many percent of those files in each population actually have user-reported bugs. And notice how I say fixes for user-reported bugs rather than user-reported bugs. So we have to use bug fixes as a proxy. It's the best thing we can do, because users or QA or testers can't report bugs to the file granularity usually. But when someone cares enough to fix a bug in an offending file, we can pick that off from the revision history. So we can grep and we can, with pretty high accuracy, know which patches are actually bug fixes. So let's start with 1 month. So files with no static analysis bug reports had about 4% of them had a user-reported bug in the next month, in the following month. And that jumps up about 3x to 13% for files with at least one report. And then it jumps up still higher with a report that's triaged and with at least two reports. So going down the column, this means that if you actually have a bug report reported by the static analysis tool, you're a bit more likely to have reports in the future, user-reported bugs in the future. And the similar trends happen across time. You don't have to worry about the numbers, just that down each column, all the numbers monotonically increase. And we did a similar thing with the number of of user-reported bugs. So not only how many percent of these files had them, how many on average were there in each file? So again, this same 3x trend kind of persists as you go down each column. And I'll give you the full numbers here. But so the important thing is down each column, all the numbers always increase. So we could speculate as to why this might be happening. So one conjecture that some developers have backed up is that although the static analysis tools find these very seemingly superficial type errors of, you know, you're not checking for a null return value, you're going out of bounds in this array, they could actually be indications that developers are misunderstanding something about the interface that they're dealing with. So for example, if you're writing a device driver and you have to deal with the rest of the kernel interfaces, perhaps, you know, if you're not an experienced driver developer, you don't really know that, oh, this function can return a negative value or something. And if you're not as familiar with the interfaces you're using, you may be more likely to misuse them and flag these kind of superficial type warnings. And you know, we argue that, you know, code that has more of these superficial type warnings are more likely to actually have deeper functionality errors that users will later report. So which suggests that one use for these static analysis tools, besides finding bugs that you can patch up easily, is to actually be using them as an indicator of code quality. So one developer in a mailing list discussion, actually, in the Linux kernel mailing list, talking about the use of static analysis tools, had the following quote, which I'll read now. Quote, "Coverity and similar tools are a true opportunity for us to find out and study suspect parts of our code. Please do not misuse these tools. The goal is not to make the tools happy next time you run them, but to actually fix the problems once and for all. If you focus too much on fixing the problems quickly rather than fixing them cleanly, then we forever lose the opportunity to clean our code because the problems will then be hidden." So this developer is responding to the fact that a lot of times when these static analysis bug reports come in, they are fixed really quickly with the small patch. I mean, you can imagine all these classes of superficial errors can be fixed fairly easily. You have a null pointer, you know, null pointer reference, you do a check, you have other things. Very quick one-liners can fix them. But what this developer is concerned with is that they might actually be indicators of deeper type of problems with the code that might involve more involved changes or even refactorings, and to not just do these quick superficial patches. So in closing, I'd like to make some suggestions for how we could make these tools more effective in practice. So number one, we could rank and filter bug reports by how likely they are to be triaged. So this is, you know, a similar recall precision problem like Google faces. You know, it doesn't matter if you produce 10,000 bug reports. It only matters that the first three the developer sees are really good and accurate and have low false positive and are the ones that the developer actually cares about. Otherwise, no one's going to bother looking through the rest of 900-something bug reports. Secondly, on a related note, you could, by knowing what code developers actually care about triaging bugs in, you could bias your static analysis. So analysis tools face this trade-off between precision and runtime. So deeper analysis can result in finding better bugs and having lower false positives, but they also take a lot longer time to run. So you could imagine, because you can figure out which code is more important to developers based on what they triage, you can imagine running a deeper analysis on those parts of the code base and doing superficial stuff on other parts of the code base. And number three, as a developer pointed out on the previous slide, is to use these tools as kind of like a dowsing rod, to direct the attention to kind of more shady or problematic code that are more likely to contain other sorts of bugs. And also, lastly, to encourage users of these tools to try to look carefully for the root causes rather than just making quick patches. So if anybody here has experiences using static analysis tools in industry or would like to discuss any of these topics in detail, I'd be happy to talk afterwards. And this time, I'd like to take questions.
I have one question. So with static analysis tools like Coverity, do you find that Linux tends to produce less and less bugs, or it's just stay the same level?
So the question is, for Linux, are there less and less bugs over time, or are they the same level? That's a hard question to answer because there's a lot of other variables involved. Because the code is growing, so perhaps you're thinking about less bugs per 1,000 lines or something. It's other people have looked into that, but I have not looked into that in detail with my data.
Okay.
Anton Bortz of University of Utah. So don't you think that the way to find deeper bugs in code or like some interface inconsistencies is not to run static analysis tools, but instead come up with some metrics of complexity of the code or something else?
So your question is, perhaps code complexity metrics are a better indicator of the shady code than
maybe in a lot of other cases, instead of like dereferencing null pointer, maybe you can do something.
I think the code complex metrics will work as well. And I think oftentimes, I haven't run the study, but I'm sure the weirder types of, let's say, dead code bugs happen because that code is really complex. Maybe they're really deeply nested and there's a lot of indirect function calls or something. So I think those two are complementary.
Yeah, thank you.
So I have a methodology question. You had that the table of probability of everything being taken care of given that one thing had been taken care of. I think it was the a previous slide here.
This one.
Yes. Yeah. And did you control for, in other words, is this in cases where there actually was another bug to be done? Because if there was only one bug, then obviously the probability that if one report is triaged, all of them are triaged is 100%.
Yes, that's a good question. Actually, I didn't put on the bottom is that we only consider sessions with more than one report. And we also have another graph in the paper that addresses that in more detail.
Okay.
Thanks.
Wenjie from Fermilab. When just you give that lecture, I just think about it. Have you give this talk, the paper, give the feedback from the people like the Andrew Morton or some key Linux developer for how useful the static analysis?
Yeah, all these quotes are from developers. We have some veteran developers. They asked to be anonymous for the purposes of the paper, but definitely some of these quotes came from some veteran developers.
Okay, thank you.
Not Andrew Morton, though, particularly.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, let's thank the speaker.